This is the Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio, and it's time for the forum. Yes, your chance to talk about the issues and the subjects that we, you know, always maybe want to discuss and debate. We maybe hear about in the news, but we don't get a chance to actually sit down and talk about. Well, with me for the forum this week, Sheila Armstrong is back with us. Sheila's from the Torch Trust. Hi, Sheila.
Hiya.
And Sean Preece, our man on the ground in Manchester. I don't quite know why he's the man on the ground in Manchester, but he is, because that's where he's chosen to live, essentially. He's Sean Preece, and he's one of my co-hosts on Tech Talk. Hello, Sean.
Morning, Stephen. Morning, Sheila. It's because I'm constantly falling over. That's why I'm always on the ground. Thank you.
Yes, I didn't want to bring it up. Right, let's get into some of the topics this week. There's a few that have come up that I thought we would go for. One came out of our Connect conversation this week around employment. We heard from Kirsty, Kat and Nikki, who joined us on the show this week, to talk about their experiences of getting into employment. And in one case with Kat, she talked to us about after 20 years, she lost her sight, and then she had to change career, had to change the whole thing, because the job she was doing, she could no longer do successfully. So, and she saw it in a sense as a positive thing. But I thought it'd be interesting to get your takes on this, because in your case, Sheila, I'm right in saying this, you've been blind your whole life.
Yeah, that's right.
And Sean, you've got retinitis pigmentosa, which means essentially your condition is, well, it's not going to get any better, is it? Let's be frank.
No, quite the opposite. Yes, I've got the eye disease of choice. It seems to be quite common. Yeah, it really kicked in when I was around 12 or 13. I started losing it, you know, where I noticed it.
So what was it like before that? Could you see much before that?
Well, I didn't notice it, but everyone around me did. It was one of those situations,
right,
you know?
Right.
I didn't feel like it affected me, but people could tell from a very young age that, oh, there's something not quite right here. But yeah, I would, especially where I'm at now, where I actually feel properly blind, in air quotes. I didn't have an issue when I was younger, right at the start.
I think that's going to cause some controversy. Properly blind.
I thought that as soon as I said it. Yes, but, you know, when I look back from going from partial sight and then to where I am now, it's always a case of, with a degenerative disease, you look back and at the time, say 10 years ago, I thought, oh, my eyesight is terrible. But when I look back from where I am now, I think, actually, it wasn't bad back then.
Yeah, yeah. I get a bit of that, because I was told with my condition that it would not deteriorate. But I think they're learning more and more today. And, you know, I think about the time when I was diagnosed, and it was, you know, we're talking 30-odd years ago. And, you know, things have changed a lot since then. And as a result, I think people know more. So that advice that I got 30 years ago probably doesn't stand as much. But in your case, Sheila, what is your condition that causes your blindness?
Well, I had a defective recessive gene that just happened to pop up, which meant that my retina and optic nerve weren't properly formed. So I can see light and dark, but they've described the optic nerve as being frayed and not correctly connected.
That's interesting. We're in the same boat then, but the difference is that my retina has, you know, one connection left. And that, you know, it's that kind of thing, isn't it? It's like, because that's what they told me when I was getting diagnosed. They said, essentially, the optic nerve, if you imagine, it's connected by strands, and, you know, you've got like one strand left.
Well, I think I've got half a strand then.
Half a strand, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
like
crazy.
Top Trumps.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I've got more strands than you, Sheila.
It sounds like it, yeah.
Bizarre, isn't it? But let's talk about employment, Sheila. Let's talk through your journey through the world of employment from a person who's been blind their whole life.
Well, I don't think I'm very typical. So in that sense, when I saw the story, I was a little bit concerned. I went to Edinburgh University, and when I came out, I was allocated these blind persons resettlement officers. I don't think they have them now. And he set up an interview without telling me or asking me if I wanted it. It was with the Scottish Braille Press. So I was furious, because I was like that in those days, because I hadn't been asked. But I went along, and I was actually offered the job. But at the same time, I had gone down in the long summer holidays that university students get to help at Torch Trust. And I really liked it. I liked the ethos. I liked the way they were doing things. And I applied to work there. And I've been there ever since, which is really unusual. I know.
Well, I don't think it's unusual necessarily, but because I do wonder, there is this thing that goes along with blindness, and it's almost a sense of, well, you'll always marry someone who's blind, because, you know...
Yeah, I've done that too.
There you go, right? So you're entirely typical in that sense.
Yeah.
Sean, you've done the same there.
Yep. It's just, you know, I don't see anything unusual in that because people meet their partners in social situations.
Yeah, and that's
as
great.
A lot of us go to blind schools or colleges or wherever, then the likelihood is you're going to meet a blind partner.
But the other side is that you end up working for an organization for blind people. So we end up all working for each other, which is actually not a bad thing. I'm all for it, but I know some people don't really like that kind of side of things. They want to get away from blind world. And I was a bit like that at the beginning of my career. Later in life, I think acceptance helps. And, you know, I've got a great job and I have a great life. So, you know, I'm not going to complain. But, you know, Sheila, from your point of view, did that ever cross your mind? Did you ever think, I don't want to work in blind world?
No, it didn't actually, because I had more than a feeling. I had a really strong desire to be able to be helpful to other blind people from quite an early age. And it was after a lot of prayer and in my Christian faith that I came to that realization. What really triggered it off was that a load of people wanted to pray that I would get, that I would become sighted. And it was quite a young group of people, and they were all really enthusiastic, as teenagers are. So I let it go ahead, but the day it was going to happen, I felt very strongly that it wasn't going to happen. Well, it didn't, obviously. but the positive out of that was that I can stand, you know, I can feel how blind people feel, and I'm not going to say stuff to them about their blindness without having experienced it myself. So I saw that as a positive. Didn't mean necessarily that I'd be working at Torch, but it did inform the decisions I've taken in life of what I've done.
Now, Sean, your situation is different because you're not in employment at the moment. And in fact, if you don't mind me saying, you have never been in full-time employment.
How dare you? This is a really uncomfortable and conversation to have for me. And I think that's part of the problem. I mean, the five most feared words for me, apart from you've put on weight, is, and what do you do? Because in any social situation, that's the first question when you meet someone new is, and what do you do? And I'm 45 now. I've never had a job. I've never been employed. And the shame and the feeling of self-worth and confidence that you have in being unemployed, it really makes an impact. You just feel like, oh, I'm useless. You know what I mean? And the reason for not having a job, I don't know. There's a lot of pressure. It's funny. It's almost a reverse of the usual situation that you find. The outside world, people who don't really know about visual impairment usually say, oh, you're blind, you're visually impaired. Of course you don't work. Whereas inside the VI community, it's more, I feel more pressure that, well, why aren't you working? And I'm not sure which is a good thing, which is a bad thing. I just know that I do feel a sense of shame that I've never worked at my age, considering my eye condition that I've had. I have had useful vision. Now, when I left, I went to Hereford RNC. When I left mainstream school, again, I didn't feel like my vision was having any impact, but I went to RNC to do all my GCSEs again because I failed everything. You know, I went a bit off the rails when I was told what was happening with my eyes. And when I left college, I had my GCSEs. I actually did computer programming and I did really well in that. So when I left there, I thought, right, that's it. I'm going to go for it. And I went to interviews and did my CV and went to the disabled employment advisor at the job center. I did that for such a long time and never got anywhere. There came a point where I must admit, I just gave up. I lost my confidence. Gave up, and you know, you sort of get yourself comfortable in the welfare trap, if you want to call it that. I mean, I would be lost without it. But again, that sense of self-worth is a thing that matters when it comes to employment.
Yeah, I totally understand that. But having said that, I know loads of blind people of serious ability, which you obviously have, who haven't been able to get jobs, and it's not any fault. It's just the way society is, and you know, you could say I was fortunate, you know, that I've done a few different jobs within Torch. I haven't always done the same job. But, you know, having once you get your feet in the door, I suppose it's easier to stay in the door. But, you know, I know lots of people with a lot of ability that haven't been able to get jobs, and it's clearly nothing to do with fault on their part.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I don't imagine there's anyone who wouldn't benefit from having a Sean Preece around because, you know, from a personal point of view.
Sheila?
Yeah.
I'll leave you to it. On some point.
but no, I mean, you know, from my point of view, you know, in a way, I'm kind of glad he doesn't have a full-time job. I say this as if he's not in the room because, you know, then he wouldn't be on the show with me. And, you know, and what a massive impact you've had on that show. You know, so for that reason, I'm kind of glad you're where you are. But I totally get it because, you know, from my point of view, I grew up in a world where not working wasn't an option. You know, it wasn't even a discussion in my family. It was a case of not, you know, will you get a job, but where are you working? And, you know, I guess for me, it was a bit easier because I could just pretend not to be blind for a while and I could get away with it. The only issue was with me, and this is where radio was great because I didn't have to necessarily see anything. Of course, the advent of computers and then all of this stuff that came in meant it was a bit more difficult, but you know, I just got round it. I kind of bluffed my way through it. I shouldn't say that, really, should I? But it's true. But, you know, it's become harder and harder. And the more my job has moved on, and, you know, I had a spell in management and I did a lot of that. And it was actually quite difficult because the paperwork and the amount of work that the physical stuff I had to do really highlighted the problems and how unprepared I perhaps was. So, you know, it's funny because even in the job, you can feel shame. You can feel that you're not up to standard with other people. You're not on the same level, technically, yeah. Mentally, whatever. Because, you know, we get more tired easily.
Yeah, I agree with that, absolutely. I often feel like that. Am I pulling my weight? I just want to go to bed.
That's right.
Because you have to hold so many things in your head all day long, and that, I think people don't realise that.
Yeah, I agree. Look, you know, we could talk about this for the whole forum because it is really interesting. I want to thank you both for sharing your story, Sean in particular, because I know that's a very personal story to you and I really appreciate you telling it to us. I know the story. I've heard it. I'm bored of it. But, you know, everyone else will benefit from that.
Don't say that.
I'm only kidding.
I could have been a contender.
Right. Let's talk about voting. Now, we're going to keep this short because we've talked so much the last time, but I just want to talk a bit about this. The government has announced that it's not going to be looking to bring in electronic voting. Now, Sheila, I know you spotted this story. Does this annoy you?
Yeah, it does actually, because I was thinking over it and thinking, well, if the bank feels it's secure enough to manage my money securely without being hacked, why can't the government manage votes? I can't figure that out. So
well,
maybe Sean's got some light to throw on that.
I was going to say, you know, maybe the banks sometimes nowadays can't do it without being hacked. But yeah, okay, maybe that's another argument. Sean, what do you think?
I think she was absolutely right. That was the example I was going to use. You know, if banks can get it together and we feel secure in their security, then why can't the government? When I first read this story, I thought, well, that makes absolute sense. Of course, nothing's 100% secure, and this is important. We don't want electoral fraud. But then when you think about it and follow the process through, the process they're using now, that's hardly 100% secure anyway, you know, using paper and ballot boxes. And of course, we should have the anonymous option of voting. And I think it makes total sense to do the online voting thing. Obviously, it's going to need some thought and preparation. And maybe the government's had its fingers burnt on that before. But I think this is something that should happen. And it makes total sense to enable us to vote.
I've had blind people say to me in the past, look, you know, Stephen, just be prepared when you get to the polling centre. You know, when you go in, you ask for, you know, the large print or the, you know, the what do you call it, that thing you put over the overlay,
the tactile overlay.
Tactile overlay that goes over the top of the page. And it's like, yeah, okay, fine, but I still have to get someone else with me. Whatever way you do this, someone has to be with you. I can't just go in, look at the list of candidates, choose the one I want, and go out. I've got to have someone who either at least can read, and I do like someone with me because I want to make sure if I am voting, I'm going to do it the right way.
Yes.
I'm not. I don't want to go in and end up voting for the Monster Raving Loony Party just because I thought the box was, or I've put the overlay up the wrong way around, or I've spoiled the ballot paper because I've ticked someone's name and not the box. You know, we have to get this information right. You know, if we're going to be part of this society, then we need to equally be able to privately cast our ballot. And I guess the only way we can do that at the moment, really, is by post. And that arguably isn't very accessible either, is it, Sheila?
No, I can't do it. I had a postal vote for a while, actually, and my husband still got one. But the long and the short was that we had to get someone to fill it in. So it wasn't a secret.
What's the point? Yeah. I mean, does this frustrate
exactly
you, Sean?
Right. That's the whole point. I mean, at the end of the day, how you've got to trust someone to say, that's it, ticking that box. I mean, you know, it's still taken out of our hands, where if we use assistive technology, that puts it back squarely with us. It gives us that independence, and it should happen. Nothing is 100% secure, as I've tried to say before, and you've got to take that into consideration. But
Sean, you know, can I just ask, because I do know you well, and I just get the impression you're not the biggest political anorak in the world. So, you know, and I'm not saying you have to be to vote, but at the same time, I don't think politics is something you really cast your mind over very often. So does it bother you, I guess, is what I'm saying? Because there are people out there who will say, oh, do you know what? I just won't bother voting. Stuff it.
Yes, and I have taken that attitude before, but that's not the point. I mean, you could cast that. That's not just a visually impaired thing. You could cast that across society. A lot of people don't care about politics. They feel like they've lost their voice anyway. So, you know, if you it's having that option there if you do want to vote. I've been up to a polling station once, and I've gone up there, and the response I've got from the people there who are meant to help and, you know, to register and do whatever and take us in, the response I've had has been so poor that I've turned away and not bothered. Mm. And that is not a good position to be in.
What about you, Sheila? Have you had good or bad experiences? Have you tried the polling station?
I've been to polling stations quite a number of times, and I've usually found people pretty helpful. But the fact is that the template, to save money, they don't always change them, so they don't fit the paper. So you couldn't line it up yourself. You have to have someone to line it up. And one time I went, it took about 5 minutes to find the template, and there was a queue forming behind me. It was very embarrassing.
It's not very equal, is it? It's not very equal in a
No,
in a
it, I mean, it's certainly
this.
Not secret. If we're aiming for a secret ballot, it's not doing it.
And if that's the point of voting, if we, you know, we are in a really interesting time at the moment as a world, not just as a nation, but as a world where democracy itself is even under question. You know, if even the act of voting is something that is denied to us, and it's not denied because we can do it, but if the act of being able to vote secretly in private, like anybody else can, you know, even if you're in a wheelchair, you can get in, you can get to the appropriate, you know, disabled area, you know, which has a lower table and it's private and locked off.
Yeah.
You know, if that's accessible, if they can do that, then, well, why can't you make this more accessible? Sounds like e-voting would be the answer to that, but it's not coming in at the moment anyway. You never know, that may change. Right, let's get back in. We're going to talk now about exploitation. Now, this is a story I saw. And exploitation might be a strong word, but that's kind of, you know, how debates work. throw out a premise and it's up to you to decide. There's a woman who was on The X Factor recently, and she was on one of the episodes. She came out and sang a song called Dreamer, which was actually her own hit from way back when in the 90s. And she came out, she sang the song, and she was very good, and the judges loved her, and she got through. But she said in an article in The Sun afterwards this week that the reason she applied for X Factor was because of her daughter, who is blind, and told her to go on the show. My question to you is, do we first of all believe that the daughter would have any impact on that woman's decision to go on the X Factor, considering she was a singer and is a singer and would have, I imagine, have come round to this idea by herself anyway? Or is this, you know, trying to pull at the heartstrings and exploit that part of that woman's life? And who's to blame for that? Is that the paper? Is that her? Is that, you know, where do we stand on this? Because I'm confused by this one.
Well, I think you're right. It's the term exploiting that's, controversial. But
well, I'm using that word.
Yeah, but of course it is. I mean, the whole, you could argue the media is exploiting all the time. Mm. It's about putting a spin on something. But when you focus in on the X Factor particularly, that's all it is, because you're absolutely right. Of course she was always going to go on here. She's a singer. It's one of the biggest TV shows on TV at the moment. Why wouldn't she go on? But every story on there has to have a spin, some reason, something to tug at the heartstrings. And in this particular case, you know, her daughter's had an operation. She's lost her vision. Of course, they're going to use that. It's definitely exploiting the situation, but that's what the TV show is anyway. I think, you know, we buy into that and that's okay.
Mm, okay, Sheila?
Well, if my mum had ever done anything like that with me, I would have killed her.
Well, we don't know the daughter's response. You may be.
No, there's nothing about the daughter at all.
No, but this is what I wonder, though. So I wonder when the journalist called up, because, you know, journalists, you know, I've worked in this field. You know, journalists will look for a hook in a story. That's what they do.
Exactly.
And I just wonder if the woman has mentioned her daughter's blind and the story has become that, you know? You wonder how the story's been written. But the fact is, it's there. Whoever came up with the story, whoever said it, I mean, you know, we're obviously upset and sad for the woman and her daughter, and the fact that the daughter's going through such a thing at this point in her life, young girl. So that's a horrible thing. I don't like, personally, the notion of it being used as a "so it made me go on X Factor" story, because the issues of blindness are far bigger than that.
Well, with the X Factor, it's either my family are really suffering and I really want to, you know, make a lot of money for them. And if that doesn't work, the media will rake up some muck on them. So I'm afraid it goes one way or the other. If they can't find a sentimental kind of story like that one, they'll find something, you know, something that the contestant has done that's maybe not very good.
Do you blame the media in this case then, Sheila?
Well, I think people that put themselves forward for the X Factor, they're in the line of fire for this kind of thing. And surely after all these years of the X Factor being run, they know that.
Haven't we moved on from this? I mean, I thought we were away from this. I mean, I get that the show is kind of like that, but I must admit, I haven't seen a lot of it on the show. I've been watching The X Factor over the past week or so, and it's. I don't feel that it has as many of the, you know, "oh, my life is terrible," and, you know, "if it wasn't for this and wasn't for that." There's elements of it, but it's not been as bad as it used to be. It used to be every story was like, you know, "I think my dog will die at the end of this episode if you don't vote for me."
Well, perhaps they've toned it down a bit. I must admit that I haven't been watching it, but I got her up on Spotify, and she's quite good, but I wouldn't say she was amazing, to be honest. But,
listen to Simon Cowell over here. well, I mean, you know, that's it. I mean, she's okay, so she's a good singer.
Yeah, she's a good singer. She's got a strong voice.
Exactly, but, you know, and I kind of like on the show they didn't bring that up. That is my worry, that they will come up next time.
They will.
Of course they will. That's the whole point. And no, I don't blame the media. We buy this, you know, we buy into this. I think we do. Like, otherwise, the show would be incredibly boring. It's just some average singers or some really good singers, you know, singing. I mean, you need something. I haven't watched this in a long time, but I used to watch it when they had the terrible ones right at the start. And, you know, it's all a bit, "oh my, that was awful." Mm. And that was the fun of it. And then you get someone who's really good or decent. And, you know, in every episode, you get one standout, either really bad or really good. And that's where those stories, you know, and the press gets interested. And you need that hook, like you said. It's just the way of things, I think.
Well, we shall see what happens. I think for me, it's one of those things that I will follow, because if, as you say, Sheila, if that story is used in the show, then what you know is that in some way the mum's okay with it.
Yeah.
If not, then the mum wouldn't be okay with it. And I would kind of hope she's not. I wouldn't want to see. And it's not just blind people or blind kids. I think anybody, any disability, anything which, you know, we as an organisation and we as people, you know, are trying to get on with our lives in as peaceful a way as possible, and to be held up as an example of pity is not a good place for us to be. I don't want to be pitied.
No, hang on. I've got to jump in here. I'm just going to flip it totally. Well, perhaps her daughter really does feel like that. She wants her to do it. She, you know, we don't know the background story, actually, the truth of it.
Yeah, but fine. But, you know, the daughter wants the mum to go on X Factor. What has that got to do with her blindness?
Well, yeah, but perhaps she, absolutely nothing, but she wants to be part of the whole process as well. I mean, it almost feels to me like, the poor little blind girl.
Yeah.
You know, let's bring pity. But that is that coming from the mother? Is the mother feeling like this? I mean, that could be projected onto her. We don't know the actual situation. The daughter could be exactly in that point. You know, I'm going through a hard time and this is important that you do the audition. It could actually be, you know, a real story. We don't know.
Well, let's make it a story about the daughter and the mum and their story of blindness and how they, because that would be more interesting to me as a reader. I'd be more interested to find out their relationship, because I think there's a lot of mums and dads out there who've got children who are blind who would appreciate that conversation being told.
But, let's get her on.
But exactly. Do you know what? That's a good point. We've got a show here. Let's get her on. You know, and maybe we should do that. Let's do that. Right, producer Chris, that'll give you something else to do. That's a good point, because, you know, we should discuss this. I'd much rather hear that. What about you, Sheila? Would you rather hear that story or I went on X Factor because my kid's blind?
No, I would rather hear more of the background, but, you know, we are talking about the sun and the mirror, so there we are.
Okay. Right, well, we'll leave it there. Sheila and Sean, thank you so much. It's been a great forum this week. Thank you so much for coming on, guys, and we will do this again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is RNIB Connect Radio.